Parshas Truma, the Parsha of the week. This is the Parsha of the commandment from God to Moshe and to the Jewish people to construct the Mishkan, the tabernacle. Allow me, please, just to give a slight introduction based on our last week's class. Some of you were not here, and some of you were here, and I don't know if the material that we studied last week affected you as much as it affected me. When we quoted from the book, the Sefer Derech Hashem, The Way of God, by Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. And that book is a very basic work on the philosophy of Judaism. And I turned to that Sefer in context of the Parsha because I felt that when we start studying laws, particularly laws that we may not understand, although most of the laws in last week's Parsha we do understand, Mishpatim, when you start talking about laws, I think that raises more questions about why we do them. As long as we're telling stories, you know, it doesn't really impact us one way or the other. We're not being asked to do anything. Once you start getting into the realm of laws, of commandments, then that raises a bunch of questions. Well, why do we have to do this, and why do we have to do that? And that, in my own mind, that caused me to probe for a reason. And then the questions of why we do the commandments, if you take it to the full extent, I believe should raise questions about why other things. Like why did God give us the Torah at all? Or you could go even further. And why did God even create us? And why did God even create the world? There's no end to where the question will take you. And so we looked into that question, and we saw that there's a very good answer why. But this realization of why is something that we don't think about enough. And consequently, we're doing mitzvahs, we're learning about mitzvahs, but we really have a very un-Jewish mentality about it. We have a very secular mentality about the Torah and about mitzvahs. Now, if you feel like I'm accusing you unfairly, I'll explain why I think we have a very un-Jewish and secular mentality about the Torah. The basic difference between the Jewish mentality and the secular mentality is, the secular mentality presumes that the world is here. That's granted. There's no reason why the world is here. The world is here. Period. And we're here. That's just for granted. And therefore, once we're here and once there's a world, now we can talk about what we should do in the world, how we can make it a better place, and how we can be just and how we can be kind. But there's no question as to why we're here. We're just here. The world was always here. I think that's the basic mentality of the secular person, and of the Jews. I think as the standard person on the street, even in Jerusalem or wherever you want, won't think about this too much. But the Jewish mentality, based on our tradition, is that the world is not here just because it's here. The world is here, and we're here for a specific reason. And the specific reason is, as the Derech Hashem puts it, that God is good. God is the ultimate goodness. He's absolutely good. And his desire, if you will say there's such a thing as the divine will, the desire of God is to bring the goodness to others, to something besides him. And therefore, He created a creature, and he created an environment whereby he can impart and he can bestow his goodness on something other than himself. And that's why he created a world, and that's why he created people, and that's why he created a specifically Jewish people, so that he could impart the Torah. The Torah is a way of saying, if you want to experience this goodness, you have to do it in a systematic way of earning this goodness. I'm sorry if this is esoteric, but I really believe that one cannot at all, I'm sorry for being passionate about it, but one cannot even begin to understand what a mitzvah is, to even begin to understand anything about the Torah, unless we start off with this premise. God desires to bestow his goodness upon someone. And that goodness is going to be bestowed in a special place where there's going to be nothing but connection to God. And the way to get to that place is to go through an intermediary environment called this world, with people, creatures such as human beings, which have a soul but also a body, the potential to choose that goodness. Which means that in this world there's going to be good and there's going to be evil. Within the individual person there's going to be an inclination for good and inclination for evil. The only way we will ever earn connection to God, which is the greatest thing ever, is by going through the environment of this world and choosing, experiencing, and collecting experiences of choosing goodness. And that's what a mitzvah is. And the whole world was created for that purpose. There's no such thing as the world is, and therefore we're going to decide what to do. The world is because of this. Every mitzvah in the Torah was given to us because it is an avenue, it is an opportunity to earn and access the goodness, which is God. But it's not going to be the full reward. It's not going to be the full experience of that goodness that will come later. This is the time to work and to reach out and to make choices that will earn us doses of connection. And every mitzvah is an opportunity for connection. And every experience and studying Torah is the act of connecting with God. A mitzvah is connecting with God. Whether we understand it, whether we don't understand it, it's connecting with God. That's why we're doing it. That's why we were given the mitzvah. The secular says, well, we're here. Let's try to make this world the best place it can be. That's not how we look at things. Why are we here? So that we can do the mitzvah. Why do we have mishpatim? Because mishpatim help us connect with God. Everything in the Torah, be it logical, be it illogical, it is for the purpose of connecting with God. Okay, I'm not going to belabor the point, but we must, in order to understand mitzvahs, we've got to start off with that premise. And not to start off with that premise is to really approach life from a very un-Jewish and secular viewpoint. I know I called it, last week I think I called it Kabbalah. It's not really Kabbalah. It's the Aleph base. It's the ABC of Judaism. All right, now we're going to have a test. What did I teach you? What did I teach you? So far. What did I teach you?
The Aleph base.
Our purpose in...
Purpose of life. The
purpose of life is... The Torah helps us in life. The purpose of life is to connect with God
so that you can get his
goodness. That we can get his goodness in the future world.
Right.
And every mitzvah is a special avenue designed by God to give us connection in a limited form here. And through that connection here, that will gain us a complete connection to God in the next world.
And you set a much better seat too.
And the more you connect with God, or the deeper the connection, the greater the connection will be in the other world. Every Jew has a share in the world to come. The degree of connection that you will earn, you will experience in the world to come, is correspondent to the connection that you earn, that you create in this world. That's a fact. Okay? It's not like someone's giving out candy. You do a mitzvah, you get a candy. That's what you do when you're a child. Because a child doesn't understand what it means to connect with God.
By extension, does that mean that if God had not selected the Jewish people, the world might not have been created?
Thank you, Jack. I couldn't have said it better. You can say that about a lot of things. If God hadn't created the Jewish people, the world wouldn't be created. That's in the very first Rashi in your Chumash there. It says Bereshis, right, which simply means in the beginning. Rashi says Bishvil Yisrael, for the sake of Israel, which is called Reshis, which is called the first. Well, that means God had created the world for the sake of Israel. It also says God created the world for the sake of the Torah. And we also have heard that at the time we stood at Mount Sinai under the Torah, to get the Torah, God held the mountain over our heads. And he said, if you accept the Torah, good. If not, this will be your grave. So everybody hears that, and what do they immediately think? Coercion!
Yeah.
Right? It's not coercion, it's a fact. It's a fact of life. God had a purpose in creating the world. The purpose cannot be realized if we don't live by the Torah. At least somebody. And if we don't, if nobody's living by the Torah, then the whole purpose of the world has failed. So there's no reason for the world to go on. That's what it means. It's not like vindictive. If you accept the Torah, all is good. If you don't accept the Torah, God has to take the world away. If there was not going to be a nation accepting the Torah, there'd be absolutely no purpose for the world to exist.
Mm-hmm.
That, unlike the secular view, which is that the world exists because it does. Like they say in Israel, Lama, Kacha. Why? Because. Yes.
As you're talking, though, what keeps going through my mind is that isn't our purpose in accepting the Torah and being here and so on to set an example for all the people of the world? I mean, it just doesn't sound right to say that it was, you know, that God did everything for the sake of the Jewish people. Aren't the Jewish people here to try to be models so that everybody can benefit? That keeps bothering me, I guess, because of my United States red mentality.
What you're really asking is, why are there other people in the world,
yeah,
who are, if they're not accepting the Torah, what's the use of them? You know, there's several answers to that. One answer is that some people may take the example from us and may decide to accept God. Some may decide to convert. Some may decide not to convert and still accept God and still be a righteous Gentile. And I believe that those people will connect with God in the world to come as well. Part of it is to create the environment of this world, which is choices. If there was no alternative in the world but to be Jewish, it wouldn't be much of a choice. If there was no alternative in this world other than to do mitzvahs, then there wouldn't be a choice. If everybody in the world was an angel, there wouldn't be a choice. That's why God didn't give the Torah to angels. If there wasn't a non-Jewish people in the world, then there'd be nothing special about being Jewish. So there's many reasons why we need an environment, a world which has a spectrum of things. We need to have a world of where there's evil. Because if there's no evil, then there's no good. Evil, good is only defined by overcoming evil. So I think that's a lot of it. In that sense, these people have a purpose too. They're helping God's plan. It's a wonderful thing. Okay. Now, what does that have to do with Truma, and why am I making such a point of this for Truma? And I don't think it's just a point for Truma. I think it's just something to constantly review and remember. By the way, just to show you how basic this is, can I just take this off for 1 second?
You can leave it on.
Well, Herb, if you see on the leftmost bookcase, okay, move to the middle of that shelf, and you'll see a blue volume called The Path of the Just.
Same author.
Same author. Now, this book is not a philosophy book. It's a training program in how to improve yourself. It's more instructive. The Derech Hashem, written by the same author, was to tell you the philosophy behind it. This is more how-to. And it says how you can elevate yourself from one level to the next. But just to show it, the whole premise of this, of self-improvement, is the premise that we started with. So, for example, in chapter 1, concerning man's duty in the world. And listen to what he says. Our sages of blessed memory have taught us that man was created for the sole purpose of rejoicing in God and deriving pleasure from the splendor of his presence. For this is true joy and the greatest pleasure that can be found. The place where this joy may truly be derived is the world to come, which was expressly created to provide for it. But the path to the object of our desires is this world. As our sages of blessed memory have said, this world is like a corridor to the world to come. A corridor. The means which lead a man to this goal are the mitzvot, in relation to which we were commanded by the Lord, may his name be blessed. The place of the performance of the mitzvot is in this world alone. Therefore, man was placed in this world first, so that by these means which were provided for him here, he would be able to reach the place which had been prepared for him, the world to come, there to be sated with the goodness which he acquired through them, through the means. As our sages of blessed memory have said, today for the mitzvot's performance and tomorrow for receiving their reward. That's chapter 1. It's page 1. This is not Kabbalah. This is ABC. Okay. So I think that this foundation has particular import when discussing the Mishkan. Okay? We now all have a Jewish perspective, right? We all have a Jewish perspective, at least for the next 40 minutes. I'm including myself. We now have a Jewish perspective. Everything in the world is for the purpose of connecting with God. Okay, now why is there a Mishkan? Why did God command us to have a Mishkan? I'm asking, what role does a Mishkan have in connecting with God? Let's repeat. So Dan mentioned that it places God's presence in the center of the Jewish people. Steve says it is something that the Jewish people unite to make and to serve in, and it connects us to God as a group. Not as individuals, merely. And Jack?
That's a conduit.
Conduit. Yeah.
The concept of karbanot, precisely as a conduit to make us closer to God.
Yes, yes, yes.
The concept of karbanot is supposed to be a very central part of the whole.
Yes.
Mishkan.
That's right. And the word karban, what does karban mean?
Draw close.
Close. You see, people say, it doesn't make sense. What are you doing? I don't know. But I know that it works. In other words, we don't necessarily have to understand why the slaughtering of the cow and the sprinkling of the blood mm-hmm. connects us to God, but we know that it does. Similar to the analogy is always given when the doctor prescribes a medication. Right? You don't ask him, well, what's exactly in the medication and how come that ingredient is there? I don't really understand why it has to have, 2 milligrams of this, that, or the other thing. How does that affect my body? We don't question that. We say that somebody who made this medication knows how the human body works and knows which chemicals and which herbs help it, and I believe that somehow this is going to affect me in a positive way. It's kind of the same thing. We don't know how a karban works, but we know that it works, and we know the purpose of the karban. We may not like it. We may feel uncomfortable about it. It may make us feel squeamish. We might not like the medicine either, right? We may feel that the medicine is bitter. That's not a reason not to take it. So when people say, why do we have karbanos? Don't just say, I don't know. Just say, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but I know why we have them. It helps us get closer to God, which is our purpose in this world. Good answer. Good answer. I think it's satisfying. Now, so it's a place for karbanos. To me, yes.
If you didn't have the basis of getting closer to Hashem, having to sacrifice whatever you have, you may have very negative consequences. Because you're really asking to sacrifice sheep and cattle and goods and things that you've grown.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really generate resentment.
Mm-hmm. And once you do have the premise about connecting to God, it makes it all that much more meaningful. Because now you're saying, I'm connecting to God by giving something of myself for Him. One can readily see how that forms connection. For we know, just from life experience, that the more you give to a cause, the more you feel at one with that cause. The more you give to a person, the more you love that person, not the less. When you give of yourself to someone, it doesn't make you resent them. If, assuming you give it because you want to connect with that person, it makes you love them more.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you feel more connected.
More
in
invested,
fact,
isn't it?
More invested. Well, in fact, the sages say that the word ahava, ahava, which is love, the center of the word ahava is love, which is Aramaic for give.
Mm-hmm.
When you give, you love. What that which you give to, you feel more connected with. Because you see yourself in that person, in that reception. I've invested in that person. That person has a part of me in that. So with the premise of getting close to God, it makes it even more meaningful when I give. So all I'm saying is, I didn't say it, but all I'd like to say is, that we have a parsha of Mishpatim, which has 50-some ways to connect with God. And then we have a parsha of Truma, which says there's one big way to connect with God, and we're going to talk about that way for the entire parsha. We're not just going to say, okay, feed the donkey and return the lost object and lend money and give tzedakah and build a mishkan and whoa. When we get to parsha's Truma, we say, this is a big topic. Building the Mishkan is a chapter unto itself, and it requires a dwelling. So apparently, in the building of the Mishkan, there is a statement that there's a major way of connecting with God in this world, the via this Mishkan. To me, the biggest statement is. And Dan, you mentioned it. The biggest statement of the Mishkan is that it's possible for God's presence to be among us in this world. I might have thought, if I would have just read The Path of the Just, the introduction that we quoted earlier, I would have thought that, hey, this world is for doing. Next world is for experiencing the connection. And that you cannot connect with God in this world. I would have thought that. Many people might think that. This is teaching us, no, you can connect with God in a big way right here.
Let me ask you a question. Assuming that you have accepted the idea that, you know, everything you said, why wouldn't you think that God would be every place there was and not necessarily you would have to build a Mishkan?
Okay. That's the next. The next message is that you can experience God's presence, but specifically in a prescribed place.
Okay.
And that requires some contemplation. Why does it have to be only in one place? God's presence could be felt anywhere. Why does there have to be a central place? And you know that there's a big dispute among the commentators. You know. Here's the Parsha of Truma. In a few weeks, there's going to be the Parsha dealing with the golden calf. Right? Which was a big, whatever it was, it was a big decline. It was a big disappointment on the part of the Jewish people in their mission of connecting with God. Here we had just started our mission. We had gotten the mission statement at the Sinai. and we were supposed to connect to God in these prescribed ways, and we blew it in a big way. And we almost lost it all. Some opinions, Rashi among them, says, and it's really chronologically can be justified, that God decided to command us concerning the construction of the tabernacle only after we fell to the golden calf. Which means, had we not fallen to the golden calf, we would not have a Mishkan. We would have felt God's presence in this world everywhere. After the golden calf, however, it wouldn't be so. It would be only in the Mishkan. And one could theorize why. What changed? But I'll tell you one thing. It's not so much in the Mishkan.
That doesn't mean he wasn't everywhere. It's just that we couldn't feel him.
Yes. It means that he would not reveal his Shekhinah anywhere.
Right.
Only there. But I want to tell you something else. It says, V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. Make for me the mikdash and I will dwell among you. The commentators point out that it doesn't say, make me the mikdash and I will dwell in it.
Right.
It doesn't say that. It says, when you make the Mishkan, then I will dwell among you. In other words,
among you or in you?
In you. Whatever. It's in you, among you. It's not a physical thing, of course. But when you make the mikdash, the merit that accrues to you for doing the mikdash makes you the kind of people that is worthy of the divine presence. It's not just make a mikdash so God has a place to go. If you make the mikdash, then you have earned God's presence for you. So there's something about the making of the mikdash that is on such a high level that it will bring about the divine presence in a way that no other mitzvah will do. It doesn't say, keep the Shabbos and I will dwell among you. It doesn't say, don't eat milk and meat and I will dwell among you. It says, build a mikdash and I will dwell among you. There's something extremely powerful about the mikdash that enables us to experience connection with God here in this world, which, as we know, as we can imagine, is a tremendous step forward towards earning God's connection in the world to come. If we can do it here, then we're really ahead of the game.
So do we say that today, being in the synagogue and davening as a communal group, God's presence is among us?
Good question. I'm glad you asked that, because we need to talk about that. Now, who was here Sunday of the dedication? Rabbi Kamenetsky, may he live and be well, said, the Midrash, that when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and the Beis HaMikdash we know was the permanent home, the Mishkan was only the temporary, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, it was taken by fire, and the Midrash describes how sparks were flying all over the place. And the sparks went far and wide. And the sparks went all over the world. And every place that a spark hit became a site worthy of a temple, of a house of study, or a house of prayer throughout the world. And Rav Kamenetsky said that every shul, every Beis Medrash is a microcosm, a minuscule piece of the Beis HaMikdash. The answer to your question is yes, absolutely. That we have within our Torah, right here in our portion, the concept that there can be places. The most concentrated place, of course, is the Mishkan. But if you will build, and you will follow the steps to building the Mishkan, and you will put the same investment, as we'll, you know, mentioned, the sense of giving, like it says, let everyone give a portion whose heart motivates him. Let them take a portion of theirs and give it for this purpose of constructing the Mishkan. If we will put that type of investment into our houses of holiness, our temples, our synagogues, our houses of study, we can create this reality of Vasuli mikdash, make a mikdash, make a sanctuary, and I will dwell among you. Not just because of the place, not just because you made a place, but because you did it, and by doing it, you have earned God's presence. That's absolutely.
So, like to ask a question, sort of a follow-up.
Please.
So according to our sages, twofold, during the time of the Mishkan, was that the exclusive place to connect, or was that the place of most intensity, right? And even today, and it's a beautiful concept about the sparks.
Yes.
I can understand that, Beit HaMikdash, Beit HaMidrash, or Beit HaKnesset, are places which are very conducive and attraction. But, there seems to be a concept that I think most of us have, sort of gotten also through Tefillah, Hashem Yimloch, other, which says that God's glory is throughout
the whole world.
I mean, the whole concept of a non-physical God seems to permeate a lot. I'm asking, it's a question. I'm not saying that God's presence is really everywhere. Let's say when we do a Shabbat table, right?
Yes.
There, it's almost as if it was a temple, right? We have a feeling almost that is at certain moments God can be just about anywhere. So I'm just wondering how do we reconcile these two concepts, if you could.
Beautiful. You spoke the truth. It God's presence can be elsewhere. It's most intensified here. That concept derives from here.
Mm-hmm.
Because God has ordained that it is possible to have Hashras HaShchina, the resting of the divine presence in this world, in the Mishkan, it becomes possible for there to be divine presence elsewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are statements in Pirkei Avot and other statements that, when you have 10 people, together and involved in Torah, the Shechina, the presence is there. And even if there's only 5, the presence is there. And even if there's only 3, the presence is there. And even if there's only 2, the presence is there. And even if there's only 1, the presence is there. Obviously, varying in intensity. But it all derives from here. Without this pasuk, without this parsha, we would be totally unaware of the fact that we can experience a taste of the divine goodness and the divine presence in this world. We might have thought that it's only... Well, let me go back. We experienced it at Mount Sinai. We experienced it in Mitzrayim. God revealed himself on the night that he killed the firstborn. There was a Gilui Shechina. It says in the Haggadah, Zo Gilui Shechina, that there was a revelation of the divine presence in Mitzrayim. And we experienced it again at Har Sinai. But one would think that that's it. That was a sale. That was grand opening day. Right? Not to be repeated. The Mishkan comes along, and the Ramban says that the sod of the Mishkan, the secret of the Mishkan is, that just as the Shechina was present in an outward form at Mount Sinai, it would continue in a less open way, in a more subdued way, on a regular basis in the Mishkan. The Ramban says that there's many similarities between the Mishkan and the Mount Sinai. There was clouds, there was fire. The whole idea of the Mishkan is that God's presence continues to be in our midst, in this world, on a daily basis. And that becomes, once we know this concept exists, now we can see how it could be extended. And there's no limit to how it can be extended, by the way. It can extend to the synagogues, it can extend to the homes, it can extend to the individual. The beautiful song that was written by, the words were written by Rav Huttner, I believe, is attributed to him. Bilvavi mishkan evne lahadar kevodo. In my heart, I will build a tabernacle. Lahadar kevodo, for the splendor of his glory. Ula mishkan mizbeach osim. And in the tabernacle, I will build an altar. And for the for the eternal light which burned in the menorah, I will take Esha Akeda, the fire of the Akeda. In other words, self-sacrifice. That will be my fire of the offering. My sacrifice. In other words, the Mishkan, the Shekhinah, can be extended. That means that we can bring, through our deeds, we can connect with God in a very, very big way here in this world. And I think the rest of it, you know, like Hillel said, this is the Torah, the rest is commentary. In other words, let's study the Parsha and see what was it that went into building the Mishkan? What was it that we could do which could bring the Shekhinah? A lot of things. Things, the idea of doing something as a community. Okay? We get a big... So we learn an important lesson. The best way to bring the Shekhinah, to connect with God, is as a people. A communal project. Right? It doesn't... We don't, you know, the best way, the most intense way, is when we do something as a united, as a family. That's how the Mishkan was made. There are many other things. The way we bring about the Shekhinah is by nedivus halev, free will, a sense of offering, a sense of volunteerism. Yidvenu libo. They would only take offerings that came out of motivation. They did not have a mandatory tax, at least not for this. They did have mandatory collections for the karbonot, but for the initial building of the Mishkan, it was only the nedivus halev. God says that the spirit of volunteerism is key to creating the environment of the Shekhinah. As we mentioned, all of the myriad details in the construction and later in the karbonot, that is an important aspect of connecting with God, is by preoccupying ourselves with a lot of deeds. In other words, just sitting back and just using your mind is not going to cut it. You're not going to be able to build a Mishkan with, you know, cerebrally. You've got to do something. You have to do something. You have to give of yourself. You have to give precious materials. One of the commentators says beautifully, you had to give the actual metals and the wool. You couldn't write a check. To me, the analogy is, you know, all right, we want to build a, you know, base midrash, let's say. Okay? How can you help build the base midrash? I could write a check, or I could supply the materials. What's the main, the most important materials for the building of a base midrash? What?
Labor?
Nope.
No. Enthusiasm?
Nope. Students. You want to contribute to the building of a base midrash? Writing a check is nice, but it's not like giving the building materials. The building materials are no question, the students. So, you know, if you want to give to the Mishkan, you got to give the gold. And not just give the value that I can buy gold with, you know. The more directly you contribute to the building, the more you are creating the environment. What other things? There's many features. We look into the Mishkan and we say, what was in the Mishkan? That will help us understand what are the important features. The first thing is the Aron.
What about the sockets? That seemed to be a big thing.
Yeah. There's significance to everything. Sockets represent the support. And you got to have, in order to have a place, you got to have walls, but you can't have walls unless something's holding up the walls. So you have to have adanim. So these all represent different aspects of support. So you need the people to write the checks too. If you have all the students showing up but there's nowhere for them to go, you don't have a Mishkan. But right, what's in the center? What's the first thing? Aron, the Ark, the Torah. We want to have God's presence in our midst. We've got to support, and we have to house the Torah. The Torah has to be the centerpiece. Torah to us is study, is practice, is everything that the Torah represents. There's another beautiful lesson. There is something called the Shulchan, which is a table, which holds bread. What do you need bread in the Mishkan for? Bread is something that you eat to keep you alive so that you can do spiritual things. The message is that when you bring God into your midst, when you create the environment of connection with God and God comes into you, He brings with Him, He buys the lunch. He brings the bread. In other words, there are physical, material benefits in this world for connecting with God. We have to believe that. We have to believe that God provides, and the more we want to connect with Him, the more He will provide. That doesn't mean the more money you'll get. It doesn't mean the richer you'll be. It means the more you can realize that God is taking care of you and that you can feel the physical care that you receive in this world as coming from God. We learn that from this, the fact that there's a shulchan with bread in the Mishkan, that there's a correlation between our spiritual investment and the care, the physical material care that we receive in this world. We learn that even though the Torah is in the center, but it's divided by the curtain, we can't really approach the actual Shechina in this world. We can warm ourselves by it, but we will never be able to approach it. There will always be a separation because we are in this world, and there is a separation in this world. And finally, another beautiful lesson is that the Mizbeach, that the altar on which the Karbanot are brought, there was a prescription that the altar had to be filled with earth. Earth, with dirt. It was made out of wood, but the wood panels were only four. One here, one here, one here, one here. There was no top and bottom. What they did was they set up the four boards and then they filled it with dirt. Every time they encamped and they set up the Mishkan, they filled the altar with dirt. So why does there have to be dirt in the altar? Why can't you just have a hollow box, wood on top and bottom? There is a verse that says it was hollow. Why does it have to be earthen in Mizbeach? So this is just my own idea, my own thought, you know, that what does earth represent? Earth is man. Man is made from earth. And man is material, and man is close, you know, we know all this spiritual talk. We know that being human is a lot, is not always so spiritual, right? In fact, most of the time it's not. Most of the time we're more aware of our earthy side and our material and all of our failings than we are of our spiritual potentials. And we can't ignore that. And we can't pretend that we're not material and earthy people with desires and with feelings of lethargy and feelings of mortality and all these things which pull us down. We can't ignore that because we are earth. But look what you can do with earth. You can take earth, the basest substance, and you can make a mizbeach out of it. And on that mizbeach, on that altar, you can bring offerings to God, which is the greatest form of connection in this world. And therefore, we should not be daunted by the fact that we are from earth. We can be from earth, and yet we have a model in the Mizbeach that the most base material thing can at the same time reach great spiritual heights. So we have to look at the Mishkan and everything in it and everything going on into it and realize that the Torah is teaching us, prescribing ways that we can connect to God in a great way in this world. We must do so together. We must do so with a focus that we are together working with a goal. The goal is to do that which can bring God's presence into our midst, and through that to connect with Him in this world and ultimately in the world to come. And that's the great promise and the great insight and the great revelation and realization that we get from Parshas Truma.
Yeah,
yeah. Have a wonderful Shabbat.